You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Regardless of where you live, there's likely a small business that puts a face to a neighborhood. It could be a family-owned restaurant, a deli, a hardware store, or ice cream parlor. The people behind these places become part of our routine, and often they're connected to good memories. We even feel like we know them. So when one of these businesses close, it does send a mini shockwave throughout the community because it marks the end of an era. That goodbye took place in East Sacramento last week. V. Miller Meats closed its doors after being in business for the past decade. The local butcher was known for partnering with family farms and ranches a short drive away, preparing high-quality meats and meals in-house. And the reasons behind its closure resonates with the challenges facing other small businesses in recent years. Eric Veldman Miller is the owner, and he joins us now. Welcome.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing great, thank you. I'd just love to start from the beginning. Why did you want to open up a butcher shop?
It just felt like the right thing to do. I would go. My previous life was as a chef, and I would go to the farmers market, and especially the one under X Street.
On Sundays.
Yeah, that was like my only day off to go do it. And I would go and kind of cruise all the wares, you know, all the farms and stuff. And you'd see, you know, apple, everything that was in season, and it was just like, oh, this is amazing. And then there was always like one rancher sitting in the back with like a cooler and like a handwritten chalkboard sign, like, I have like beef shanks and maybe, you know, like two other cuts that you, like, nobody knew what to do with or would even sell. And I always felt bad for them because they're working as hard and sometimes harder than everybody else. And then there was really no place for them to showcase what they were selling. And then I've also really been a big believer in healthy meats and, you know, non-feedlotted, happy animals, basically.
Yeah. A lot of people obviously eat meat, but I don't know if a lot of us necessarily know what it takes to break down an animal into nice cuts, the skill that's involved. What would you like people to know about this skill? Why are butchers needed?
Well, without butchers, really, the animal it's not of value until you can actually cook it. And that's what a butcher does, is we bring basically the meat to the table, for lack of a better way. So there's different ways to do it. There's, you know, European style breaking, American style breaking, industrial breaking, things like that. But what we did was like a more of a European style table breaking, up until we kind of structurally engineered a way to hang the animal from the ceiling and break it down a little bit faster, and it was a little bit more ergonomic. But to pull all the cuts of value out of each and every animal, a beef, a lamb, or a pig.
How is your meat different from what someone would buy at a larger grocery store?
Yeah, that was really one of the things that set us apart, I think. All of our animals came from local-ish, as close as possible, family farms. They were all raised outdoors. They were all raised with very little to no confinement, which we felt, you know, it definitely showed up in the meat. The flavor of the meat, the consistency, the fat, like all good things, to the point where, like, with our grass-finished beef, grass-fed and grass-finished are two different things, by the way. The meat tastes like something, whereas in like commodity beef or feedlotted beef, you're really tasting the fat, and you're tasting the corn and the fat, and it's really good. And everybody's like, that's good. But where the grass-finished beef is, it's a little bit leaner by nature. And the fleshy part of the meat actually has like big flavor to it.
I would imagine over the past decade, you had a lot of regulars that would go to V. Miller Meats, which really underscores how important small businesses are to neighborhoods and the city. There aren't really a lot of butchers anymore, but how important were butchers in neighborhoods as a small business? Because they used to be around a lot more, like a generation or two ago.
Oh, man, it used to be like that's where everybody would meet. You know, it was the butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker. It's where everybody would meet. And that's, you know, way back in history, not a couple of decades, but, you know, hundreds of years. That was really like, he was the judge, jury, and executioner in a lot of neighborhoods. And he was the guy that was controlling the food sources. So if you could go see the butcher, get your dispute settled, and also feed your family at the same time. And we found over the last like 10 years that like, well, before we opened, it really it didn't exist. It was, you know, grocery stores. And then there's a few meat markets. Shout out to Taylor's. They're amazing.
Yeah, Inland Park.
Yeah, they're great. I love those guys. But with us opening, it took a little while, but then it became like we were just seeing more and more people come in and, you know, talking. We try to not talk politics too much, but like, you know, what's going on in the neighborhood? Who's moving in? Why did they build that crosswalk there? You know, like just the whole neighborhood, it just felt really cool. And people were like, we can't wait to bring our kids in. And it blew me away. I think we were like probably 2 or 3 years in, and one of our regular customers came in with their parents. And I was like, what are you guys doing here? And they're like, well, we had to show them your shop. And I was like, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I think that's probably the best compliment is people not only spent their money, they spent their time, and they even opened up to you as well. You become part of the community. You're ingrained in it.
Yeah, I think we sometimes become, we became kind of like people who tell all their worries to bartenders. Butchers, we get, a lot of times we get a little bit more, I guess, the like what's going on, like why I'm eating this way.
Yes.
Now, and you're like, oh please. But you still care, and it's cool that they're trusting you with that. And I always really, really, and you know, I have some very, very great customers that I really enjoyed speaking with every day.
Yeah.
Or as often as I saw them.
Despite the TMI from time to time. But
yeah.
When you posted on Instagram, that's how you chose to make your announcement that you were going to be closing last week. You ended up closing a day early because you sold out of, you know, all of your product.
Yeah.
At the store. You had a huge turnout. What were the main reasons why you chose to close your doors after 10 years?
Well, there's a multitude of things. The overall cost of everything, straight like from meat to all the things that you don't think about, the paper, the little sticky price tags that you put on everything. That the prices of those doubled over the last few years. Just everything went up, and the only thing that didn't go up was our customer visits, and that was really it. Just got to a point where I was not breaking even, but just digging a hole. And usually throughout the year, we kind of start in January, and butcher shops just kind of cruise through the year. And, you know, there's some highs and lows throughout the year. Father's Day being a big weekend for us traditionally, and that was down by a lot, not, you know, 2 or 3 percentage points, but I think like 35 or 40 percentage points. And then the 4th of July came. We're like, we'll get them. We'll be fine. And then it was 118, 120 degrees on the 4th of July. So people just were not.
That's right.
We're not partying. And then it just seemed kind of like that, you know, whatever, like what, you know, it, weather or, you know, economy, economics, whatever it was, just kind of like really hit us a lot more. It was very tangible. You could see like, oh, over the past, you know, several years when, you know, there was an announcement like, oh, the stock market went down or whatever. We didn't really feel that. It wasn't, you know, people were still eating. But just over the last year, it really just, you could feel it. And you knew like on Monday, if like the stock market dropped a bunch of points, I don't understand how that thing works. But if the stock market went down a bunch of points, you're like, it's going to be a slow week.
Mm.
And it totally was. So we carried on. We're like, okay, starting the holiday season, starting in like beginning of November, late September, late October, usually was like where in a butcher shop like mine, that's where we make money. It's a lot of people. It's higher value cuts. People are like, oh, we'll have a prime rib and
it's a special
like that.
Occasion.
Yeah. And what we found was like we still kind of less customers coming in. So that was a little worrisome. And then right after Thanksgiving, when we all start to kind of forecast and bring in meats and start getting things ready for big parties and people's celebrations and stuff, those orders weren't coming in. And that just, I'm always totally pegged on stress during those months anyways, but it was really rough. And we're like, what's going on? And then I just happened to hear a radio ad on the way in, and I forget the name of the grocery store. They were selling rib roasts, you know, call it what you will, prime rib or rib roast. They were selling rib roasts for $7 a pound. And basically that just, you know, I'm of the same ilk. I have to look after my money, and whether I'm looking at spending to feed my family, you know, or a big holiday party, if I'm going to spend $300 on a roast, or if I'm going to end up spending, you know, $100 on a roast, that's a really big gap.
Mm-hmm.
And I do understand it. I choose not to eat that way, but I definitely understand the way that feels on your pocketbook, for sure.
Yeah, and especially in the last 5 years, grocery prices have cost of living, affordability. These are topics that are brought up time and time again, and some would argue getting compounded and becoming even more challenging. So some may find smaller businesses like yours, like, out of their price range. But can you walk us through, I guess, the assembly line of what it takes to get from a farm to your store and why things need to cost the way they do?
Yeah, well, it starts on the farm. We'll just talk about beef, just one animal in particular. It starts on the farm. Our grass-fed animals are, because they finish on grass, they never go to a feedlot. They stay on the grass. They stay on the farm a lot longer. So they're a little bit older animal, just so they get bigger to a bigger weight. And then they get trucked to a processor or a slaughterhouse, which is the nice way to say slaughterhouse now. They get trucked there. So there's fees and, you know, fees in trucking, and then there's slaughter fees. In our case, most of our beef came in whole, so the cut fees were not really an issue. But where that really kind of bottlenecked over the last 5 years is several of the slaughterhouses that were available to our local farmers closed due to economic reasons or whatever, mismanagement in some cases.
So you don't have as much competition.
So there is really, like, there's now within a 2 hours drive where there used to be, I think, three or four processors, there's one. And then there's competition for the ranchers to get in. And then they can basically dictate how many animals they, like, you have to do this many animals every week or we're not going to do business with you. That kind of thing. And that's, you know, that's how they're running their business, and that's fine. It just kind of messed with us a little bit. So we had to pivot a few times, like, just the way we were getting our animals. But the way we brought in everything whole, like, traditionally would have allowed us to just save some costs on that. And then it's the labor in the shop to break down the animal. But last year it was just particularly challenging because, you know, the two or three slaughterhouses that we're using, now it's down to one. This is dictates, so your delivery day gets messed up. So labor, you know, my team, like, everybody's days off switched, you know, their schedule switched, and availability switches, which was, like, it, as far as our customers were concerned, you know, it didn't really matter what day, you know, let's say, you know, what day which butcher or whoever was working, it didn't really matter. Mm-hmm. But what day, you know, was what available, which, you know, what day can I get sirloin? What day, you know, when's the fresh beef come in? All that kind of stuff. So that kind of switched around a lot too. Don't really know if that had much impact on it. But it you know, basically once we got the meat, we'd, you know, break it down and then it was all for sale. And that was kind of...
I would also think, because I've also talked to, you know, restaurants, their margins are so slim. I would think that your margins aren't necessarily high.
No, the margins were terrible. Yeah. we tried really with the butcher shop itself, like, just bringing in meat, chopping it up and selling it, which is a simple way to put it. The margins were poor. But what we did as a whole animal butcher, there's a lot of byproducts that you can produce off of a beef carcass, just for instance. So we had, we tried to use basically all the scraps, all the bones. We'd use most of our bones for bone broth. And then whatever bones we didn't use for bone broth, we'd sell for other people to make stock or broth. And then even, like, so much as the fat, we would render down so people had a healthy cooking fat to use. So we were, rendering tallow 8-9 years ago when nobody wanted it, which we always had it. We were, like, giving it away and just what do we do with all this? So we would always cook with it in the shop. And now it just in the last probably year, it was just like, oh, tallow, you have it. Yay, this is cool. So, you know, but we also, we had a really cool dinner program that we did for years and years and years, which just kind of dried up last year, which was unfortunate. It just dried up. It was like, oh, we've had that and we're done.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Eric Veldman Miller, the owner of V. Miller Meats in Sacramento. The local butcher closed its doors last week after being in business for the past decade. I also think about the farms and the ranches that you partnered with. I would think that this closure also hurts them or impacts them as well and kind of makes it more difficult for us to be close to the food that's in our backyard.
Yeah, the mission statement on the at the shop was always just to pare it down, was just to put people in contact or in touch with their food source, so they knew where that. It was always cool. You knew where the meat was coming from and what ranch, and you know we were friends and still friends with all of our ranchers, but the impact of us not being able to offer that, albeit we were a small shop, you know, one beef carcass plus, you know, another 500 or 600 pounds of beef every week, plus pigs and lamb and all that. You have to say it, they're going to feel that. I mean, we've had a beef carcass in that for 52 weeks a year for almost 10 years. And that's a lot of cows. And now that they have to find another outlet. Luckily for them, our two beef ranches in particular that we worked with both have kind of moved a little bit into an online or a freeze and ship kind of thing. So for them, that works out pretty well. And that impacted us over the last couple of years as well, because for the first long time, we were able to say, oh, I could just call them and order, you know, I need two beef this week, or one and a half, or one and a half plus, you know, three cases of ribeyes. And there was never a problem. And then with the advent of their online sales, there was a lot more like, oh, we don't have that this week.
So supplier's also a competitor now.
In a sense, yeah.
Yeah. I just also think we're in such an agricultural mecca here in Sacramento. I just think it can be so hard for people to find affordable local sources to food that's just grown and raised a short drive away. I mean, you were a piece of this. Why do you think that is?
Well, why do you think we couldn't make it? Or
I guess, why do you think it's difficult to have businesses like yours where we're actually buying food, in your case, meat, from people that are closer? When you go to the store and you're buying meat or vegetables or produce, like, they can come from other countries. Whereas I know it's kind of like a meta question, but we're surrounded by all this food, but whether we have access to it in an affordable way is another issue or story.
How much time you got? I promised my wife I wouldn't go down this rabbit hole, but here we go. Small farms, small problems, but now we have big problems. So we already talked about like the slaughterhouses and trucking and, you know, costs, all those kinds of things. And then you put that into a special niche where everybody already has this label that they think they're way more expensive than you are. And yes, we were more expensive. True story. But we did the best we could. I kept prices to where they were, but this is the real cost of meat. And then, so where we kind of get that disconnect now is like with big box stores, they're all buying from three different big meat companies, whether which little division of that company they want to put their little, you know, their stamp on, like, oh, this is, you know, level three sustainability or level two, whatever. Most of that stuff's coming from the same places. And it's difficult for me to be really excited about the way we look at meat, because if you just look at chicken, it's the easiest answer. People like really think chicken should be really cheap. Like, oh, it's just a little animal and we feed our family with it and it's a, you know, Tuesday night dinner. It should be really cheap. But the truth is that that was an animal. It had a life. A farmer raised it. It got processed. It got trucked. It got shipped. So there's costs involved in all of that. So when you like backtrack a lot and you look at, you know, one of the just a regular grocery store or a big box, and you see like, oh, you know, chicken wings are 30 cents a pound or whatever it is. You're just like, oh, like for me, I'm like, what's broken there? And I don't have answers to it. You know, we tried to fill that gap, and, you know, being just a little guy, there's no, you know, whether I bought one beef a week or if I bought five beef a week, I didn't get any, there was no price breaks because my ranchers have no price breaks to give.
Mm. Yeah. Finally, I think about you had this weekend to maybe spend some time to decompress. I mean, last week was a big one for you personally and professionally. Have you had some time to reflect on the goodbyes that customers said to you last week? Because you had a line out the door on some days, and you closed early because a lot of people showed up.
Yeah, I felt like really just kind of blessed, all, you know, with all that. The news kind of broke well before we thought it was gonna. And the line out the door started on Tuesday afternoon. I'm like, oh boy. And then Wednesday, there was about 40 people standing outside the door. And that continued on until like late afternoon. And I'm like, okay, we have a little bit of stuff for tomorrow, but, you know, maybe the dust will settle a little bit. And then it happened again on whatever, Thursday. And we you know, made sausage, and we used, you know, we had everything we could to put out to sell, and that's what we did. And I thought originally that I thought it was going to carry us through Saturday and would be like this nice, you know, leisurely pace through the weekend. But, you know, our regular customers were really, really supportive, and they just showed up in force and cleaned us out. And rather than standing there on Friday and just, you know, saying goodbyes and sorry, we're out of everything, we ended up having to lock the door late Thursday afternoon.
Hmm. Well, Eric, thank you for taking the time to stop by here. And it's a very much a bittersweet goodbye to Sacramento.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Eric Veldman Miller is the owner of V. Miller Meats in Sacramento. The local butcher closed its doors after being in business for the past decade. Still ahead, why daylight saving time is so hard to change, even in California, where voters approved a proposition to do just that. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.